In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
South Dakotans are here to help, but sometimes helpers need assistance too. From SDPB, today is Tuesday, September 17th. This is In the Moment. We begin by facing monumental loss, but together, in community. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Families who have faced crisis gather to talk about how to save lives and grapple with unanswered questions. Then, Gina Benz is in her 25th year of teaching. The students she guided into education are now her colleagues. So, on Teacher Talk, we've been chatting about the things new teachers need to know as they begin their careers. Today, you can't be their savior. Thoughts on how to help without losing yourself. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first.
Healthcare reporting on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Before we get started today, a note to listeners, we're going to talk about suicide in this next conversation. And if you are not in a good place to listen to that today, understandable. Come back in about 20 minutes. We're here when you're ready. Take care of yourself. And remember this number, 988. You're going to hear 988 throughout the following conversation. It is the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. You can call it, you can text it, and that is how you reach professionals any time of the day. Now, this is a big issue. According to the South Dakota Department of Health, the state saw 207 suicide deaths in 2021. The largest proportion of those deaths were men ages 20 to 29 years old. So, for National Suicide Prevention Month, we are highlighting a few South Dakota events and resources to prevent suicide and to get us talking about preventing suicide. First, the 437 Project. That's a run across the state to raise money for the Helpline Center. Runners hit the pavement from September 19th through the 22nd, starting their relay-style journey in the west side of the state, and that ends on Sunday in Sioux Falls. You can learn more at the437project.org. And on Saturday, there's an Out of Darkness walk taking place in Sioux Falls at Levitt at the Falls. That's a walk to raise awareness and funds for mental health and suicide prevention programs. Now, Janine Harris lost her daughter, Nikki, to suicide in 2005, and she started Nikki's Walk in her honor. Janine is now a co-chair of the Out of Darkness Walk through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Janet Harvey is the foundation's special events manager for the Dakotas. Harris and Harvey sat down with me in the SDPB Kirby Family Studio to preview the event and talk about the personal impacts of suicide. Harvey shares how a bracelet of beads provides an avenue for connection at the Out of Darkness walk.
The big part of our walk is our bead ceremony. And that is, we have 10 different colors of beads that people wear, and they each represent their connection to our cause. So there is a dark blue bead for every single person there, because that just represents that you support suicide awareness and prevention. But then there are various colors to represent if you have lost a child, if you have lost a loved one, a spouse, a partner, a friend, a relative, if you are personally struggling, if you are there in support of someone who is struggling, etc. But we do have signs as to what each color represents. And as we have someone come forward with that color of bead, we encourage everyone there that is also wearing that color bead to raise their beads and show that I am also part of that community and I am supporting you as part of that similar situation or that similar cause.
So Janine, when people come and they have that dark blue bead, and but yet they don't have a personal family story, but they are out supporting their neighbors and their community members And you see that. What does that mean for you as someone who has lost a child?
Oh, that just means the world to me, because I still think there's a stigma when you talk about suicide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it isn't something that just will come up in a conversation. So I love to see that support out there. And also, not only to see that support, but to feel that support, because I know that when the topic comes up of suicide, and someone knows that you have lost someone, they're more willing to talk about their loss. And that's one thing I want to always do, is make people feel comfortable, to know that we understand. We want to give others hope and know that whatever you're going through, you can share that with us and know that you're in a safe place.
Every story is different. You've probably heard hundreds, thousands of other people's stories. What are some of the commonalities that you find in Nikki's life?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, we talk about, and we're trained in, you know, like warning signs. And sometimes that is something you kind of don't realize till you start thinking back. You know, we as parents, you know, it's easy to get busy and wrapped up in our jobs and our life in school and church and in our community, which, of course, Sioux Falls is a wonderful community. But still, sometimes we have to stop and take a moment. And when someone makes a comment, maybe ask that hard question, or what did you mean by that, or what are you thinking? You know, this kind of bothers me. And, you know, or maybe they find a writing or something that someone did. And just to ask the question, are you thinking about suicide, or are you thinking about harming yourself? Because we want them to know that we're here to help.
There was a time when that question was stigmatized in itself. Janet, what do
Absolutely.
We know now about coming out and asking someone, are you thinking about self-harm?
If you just ask the question, you might open up a conversation that person didn't feel that they could have with you, maybe with anyone. And whether that person happens to be a family member, a friend, a colleague, or someone just on the street, and you think that they might be struggling, asking that question gives them permission to now share and open up. And that could very well be the key to saving their life. We do have an amazing resource across the country, and of course in Sioux Falls, in South Dakota. That is 988. That is the mental health crisis line. And I encourage anyone and everyone to call on behalf of yourself, behalf of someone else, or like I said, even if it's someone you see on the street, you open up a conversation. You don't have to carry that conversation. There are professionals at the 988 line that can take the conversation from there. And you could just tell them, I now need to step away, because self-care here is immensely important. So you might get yourself into a position where I can't carry this conversation further, but that doesn't mean the conversation should cease. It can absolutely continue, and the professionals can take it from you.
One thing that is common also is people talk about the isolation and their family member or friend feeling like they're alone. And then probably what hurts me the most is that no one is going to miss me if I'm not here, because that is not true. And of all the time that I have worked in prevention and awareness, and we have these walks, whether it's through American Foundation for Suicide Prevention or Lost and Found or the Helpline Center, you ought to see the friends and family members that dearly miss you. Yeah. And yes, we want you here. We do want you to stay.
I love what you said, Janet, about that 988 number. That is another tool of communication that you have. If somebody is talking to you, you can say, by the way, you can dial 988. If you can call this number.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I get a lot of, contact with the VA, and they always told me, call before it's a crisis.
Yes.
And I think that was a very useful piece of information for me, because I think people have a tendency to think, oh, it's not that bad yet.
Right.
But I'm thinking these thoughts. Call before it's a crisis.
Yeah.
Call more than once.
The 988 number, 24/7, 365. There is no time you will not reach someone to speak to personally. The other thing that's really nice about the line is it's 100% confidential, of course, but you're talking with someone that you don't have a personal connection to, and you're talking to someone that you are not face-to-face with. So being able to truly voice what you are feeling, voice how what's going on with you right now, becomes a little easier for some because you're not personally connected. Whereas, again, those people are professionals, so do not ever hesitate. And even if you just are thinking or having thoughts, call. If you are seeing someone and you are concerned about them, call. There's also a text line to that as well. So please don't ever hesitate to dial 988 and get the support and the help. And if they need to intervene, they will make those decisions.
Janine, when we talk about commonalities, things that often, every story is unique, every family is unique. And one of the things that I find very common is confusion. Could we have done something? What happened? What did we not know? Where did we fail? A lot of self-blaming, a lot of, can we talk about it now?
Yes, yes. And that's, and the guilt that you feel.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm a mother. Why, you know, what was wrong with me that I couldn't see that in my daughter? And what you learn in the grief process is sometimes you just can't see those things. Sometimes it's maybe they're good at hiding and covering it up and not showing what they're really feeling.
What do you rely on today to help you continue the ongoing work of grieving the loss of your daughter?
Sharing some of the stories that I hear from other family members and knowing that you're not alone and that you're not going crazy and that what you were thinking and feeling is so normal. You know, time can be so healing and time can be cruel also. But when you're out there with others where there's no judgment and who can understand. And a lot of times, you know, when you're in this type of work, you don't always hear the positive results. But I just know in my heart that somewhere I hope someone listened and reached out and got the help that they so richly deserve.
Janet, talk about the positive stories, because that's a really good point.
It is.
Sometimes it can be just as hard to say to someone, I did make that phone call, or I did reach out to a friend, and I'm here because other people will think of you differently.
And, you know, that's really sad that they do. And you're right. There is still stigma associated, but we have a lot of people that come to our events that wear our green beads. Again, that's for you've had a personal struggle, whether it's current or past struggle, and to self-identify that you are personally struggling. But that's also a lot of healing to be able to do that too. Because if they can say, I'm struggling, and then the person beside them says, you know, I have struggled in the past. I understand. Again, that you are not alone. All of these feelings are justified. All of these feelings are valid. You need to understand that you're not the only one experiencing struggles and feelings and difficulties and challenges. that's kind of what life is. If they're to the point where you're now thinking, having suicide thoughts, then you need to, you know, admit you're struggling. Go to someone and talk to them about that. You're going to find people are extremely open and extremely loving and caring and supportive of you when you literally just say, I'm really struggling right now. I need to talk.
How important is it, Janine, to say things like, oh, I have depression or I'm struggling with depression? I think if you had cancer and you were going to get your radiation, maybe you would keep that private from some people, that you know, you're not necessarily going to wear a sign saying I'm going to get my radiation treatment today. But there would be a good number of people that you would be talking with about that, that would be giving you support. So how important is it to talk about struggling and accept some of the support? Because I'm thinking back to what you said about people saying, oh, you're not going to miss me, or it's going to be easier if you're not here, you know, if I'm not around for you to have to like help me all the time. And people struggle with those feelings. What does that bring up for you as I kind of lay that fabric out for you?
Well, and the first thing that comes to mind is to have that conversation, which is not always easy. I remember when Nikki had some depression in high school, and I shared something with one of her teachers. She was really upset with me. And I said, what I tried to say was, but you know, Nikki, there's people that will understand when you have things going on like that. And you know, you think about going on with your life and your daily activities, your family, children, whatever, or just if you're a student or maybe someone elderly. And it's like, all of a sudden, whoa, something's not right here. I'm not feeling, unless somebody knows what you're going through or struggling with, you know, it not only might be a friend, maybe it's somebody from the church, or maybe it's somebody in your, just in your neighborhood that you share that with. I remember talking to a group of high school students and saying, like Janet spoke earlier about saying something, or if you're afraid to ask the question, ask somebody if they could check on them, because even if they would be a little mad at you for saying something, in the end, you would rather have that person hear than not say anything and keep quiet and then for them to be gone.
Tell me something wonderful about Nikki that you remember still about her on her best day, or something about her bedroom, or something about her personality, the activities that she did. Help me get a fuller picture of her, because I think it's so important not to remember her as an obituary.
Yes, thank you for that. I appreciate that. We had so much fun. She was such a fun girl. Birthday parties and My Little Pony and
oh, that's awesome.
She was in dance since she was like 7 years old up until she was about 18, 19 years old. She loved performing. She was able to go to several places, not only Sioux Falls, Omaha, Minneapolis, Florida, and perform in different things. And it was just so much fun thinking of those positive things that we did together. That's what I like to remember and hang on to. And she had an older brother, and of course they would fight like brothers and sisters would, but then when it came down to it, they were like best buddies. So, you know, that was really important to her. And I'm glad too, at times we had some talks about God and religion. That's what I hang on to. I feel like she's helping me do this work, so I'm not alone in that.
Janet, you must, I mean, stand in awe of the courage of family members.
Oh, I do every day.
Who tell their stories again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who I'm sure people say ridiculous things to you that can be hurtful unintentionally, as they try to stumble through the right thing to say. Maybe you say the wrong thing, and that you come back again and again and hold each other up. That's That's a good and loving mother.
It is. That's beautiful. And I love hearing the beautiful stories. And that's why one of the questions I like to ask to a survivor is, tell me something beautiful about your son, your daughter, your brother, your sister, whoever they have lost, because almost immediately a smile comes to their face. And while we're talking about something difficult, if you can put a smile on someone's face, because they are now recalling the My Little Pony story, that's powerful. That's extremely powerful. We don't need to always talk about how they died. Right. We need to talk about how they lived. And I think that's really what really energizes me again to go through my day in the work that I do, because there are so many incredible, beautiful stories about those family members. And I just, that really gives me a lot of warmth.
And another thing, thank you, Janet. That was beautiful. Another thing I'd like to add is say their name.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Say their name.
Oh,
it's
gosh,
okay.
Yes.
That, you know, that warms my heart. You can say Nikki or Nicole, and I love that because sometimes I think, you know, she only lived till she was 20. And it's like, you know, who's going to remember? And it's, that is really comforting to me when somebody says they have a memory.
Call or text 988 if you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health. Call before you think you need to. That resource is available 24/7. Again, it's 988. And you can learn more online about the Out of Darkness Walk. It happens on Saturday at Levitt at the Falls in Sioux Falls. Go to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's website to learn more. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Teaching can feel like a lot, and it can come with an intense need to hold everyone together, especially your students. Today's Teacher Talk features part 3 of Gina Benz's Dear New Teacher series. We're going to focus on how teachers can provide healthy support to students. Gina Benz is a recipient of the Milken Educator Award. She is in her 25th year of teaching, and she helps the next generation of educators find their way through the Teacher Pathway Program. Dr. Jackie Wilbur is on the faculty of the University of South Dakota. She is director of the Center for Student and Professional Services in the School of Education. Here's our conversation.
This is the 3rd out of 4 in this series I created, and I just was thinking about my Teacher Pathway students who are now my colleagues working in the school system. There's 2 groups of them, and I just wanted to just put a little love out there. Hopefully that I have a little wisdom that'll help them so they don't make the same mistakes I made when I was a new teacher.
Yeah. It has to be so gratifying to have colleagues that you have watched question whether they wanted to be in this profession and then return to teach at your side.
Yes. I have former students who teach alongside me. I have one of my Teacher Pathway students who's doing her internship right now at Roosevelt, just not too far from my classroom. It's really great. And then on a smaller scale, my Teacher Pathway students went to the elementary schools today for the first time, where they get to actually see the things we've learned about put into practice. And one of them came up to me in the hallway later and said, "That was really great. I think I might consider being a teacher." And so apparently she didn't take the class because she was thinking of being a teacher. She probably just thought it sounded interesting. But, hey, we'll see where this leads.
Jackie, was there a moment that you recall thinking, "Hey, I think I want to be a teacher"?
I don't know if I have an exact moment, but maybe a series of moments where it dawned on me that that might be a good profession for me to go into. And I also did have the encouragement of several teachers along the way who kind of gave me a wink and a nudge. I've been wanting to say each week as we've done this that I got to experience Dear New Teacher from Gina in real life starting in 2010 when we taught next door to each other. And I'm sure, Gina, I just think back on that time and I'm so grateful for you. I can't imagine how exhausting I must have been because I popped over all the time and was like, this happened, this happened, this happened. What do I do about this? How come this is going this way? I just was unrelenting and she was right next door and so nice to me. So thank you for writing this series for these students who don't have access to you in the way that I did. And thank you for that time.
You weren't exhausting at all. It was a back and forth. I needed you as well.
All right. This is the pop-in. This is your pop-in for today. And the topic at hand is you can't be their savior.
Yes. This has been a mantra, if you will, that I have to remind myself of constantly, because I think as most teachers, we naturally are helpers. We want to help people. We naturally have some compassion and mm-hmm. also a desire to see justice. And so that can definitely devolve into a savior situation. And that's just simply not possible for any human being. It's not yeah. possible for people who are in politics. It's not possible for friends. It's people are fallible. No one can be your savior.
Yeah. Let's talk about the word savior. What do you mean by savior?
I guess I mean,
like, where is that line between I'm a helper, I'm a teacher, I'm a friend, I'm a mentor, and I am a savior? What does that word mean to you?
Ooh, that's a great question. And I really hope Jackie weighs in too. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, words. Words matter, and we all have sometimes slightly different definitions. So what does savior mean to me? It means that I would want to be someone's hero who completely changes their life. And when I say it that way, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But, I mean, it also sounds really appealing to be a hero in somebody's life.
Yeah.
I've definitely learned, though, that that's just impossible.
Yeah. Jackie, what's the definition of savior in this context for you?
Well, I think on one level, there's this desire in the field of education. People go into it recognizing that there are problems and that there are kids who need help, if not saving is one way they might think of it. That's how I'm looking at the term, is thinking that you can save people from heartache and all of the troubles that people experience. But I don't know. We've talked a lot about Abbott Elementary on this show. And
the TV Jeanine, show, yeah.
Yes,
let's do it.
And Jeanine Teague's the main character there, I think, particularly in the first season, which is her second year of teaching. But young teacher, she really has what I would say kind of this savior complex, where she's seeing every problem and saying, I personally am going to be able to do something about all of these problems that exist, yeah. from the electricity in the school building to students with low reading abilities. There's just this idea that she could, through her, I don't know, all of her efforts, make it all better. Yeah. And that concept, I think, is the savior concept.
Didn't she try to fix a toilet?
Yeah, a toilet, the electricity.
It exploded in her face.
All, yes, yes. She was covered in toilet water in one episode. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. The computers for the library, like everything that happens that she sees in a lower income school. Mm-hmm. She has an idea to fix it, and she's convinced that if everybody just had a good attitude and went out and did the work, that it would all be solved. And part of the humor is her finding and discovering again and again that it's a little more complicated than she thought it was.
So well intended.
Yeah.
But.
And that's part of what makes it what makes that show so popular and relatable and funny. But in reality, Gina, the things that you see are often more complicated than a broken toilet. Mm-hmm. And that's a metaphor for things that happen in the lives of your students that are traumatic and tragic and unfair and unjust. And dear new teacher, you're going to see how some people's lives become unraveled right in front of you.
Absolutely.
Were you prepared for that?
I logically, I knew that that would happen. I've had students who have lost a parent to death while they've been with me. I've had students who go through their own tragic, terrible illnesses. I've had students get arrested and end up in jail. And so logically I knew that would happen, but when they wiggle into your heart And then all that stuff happens. Mm-hmm. You can't really prepare someone for it. But I think there again, there's the importance of mentors where we can remind that you can't do the saving. Just play your part. Provide supports, provide resources, but you're not going to be the savior. It takes a cliche. It takes a village.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jackie, I remember volunteering in my daughter's kindergarten class, and there was a young boy who came in, and his coat every day just absolutely smelled of cigarette smoke. And, I mean, powerful, overwhelming cigarette smoke. And I just remember hanging up his coat for him or helping him in the little cubbies and wondering what his life was like at home, which was none of my business. But it was hard not to notice that he was coming to school clearly from a home that had a lot of secondhand smoke.
Let me quickly interject there.
Yeah.
I've had students come to school and their coat clearly smells of marijuana.
Oh.
And it's not because they are using marijuana.
Yeah.
It's from the home.
It's from the home.
Mm. But you were asking Jackie.
Yeah. Jackie, weigh in on this idea of the things that you are going to see, some of which are none of your business, some of which are reportable, mm-hmm. and that you need to take action on. But the emotions of those can weigh on a young teacher, on a teacher of any level of experience.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think all of those things are different for different people. There's certain things that we see as educators that pull on our heartstrings in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so for some teachers who maybe grew up in a home with cigarette smoke, they hang that coat up every day and are unbothered, right? And they maybe know more about what's going on with that student, and it doesn't pull at them in the same way. And then for other teachers, it's really heart-wrenching. And so there's a challenge there of knowing what your own pieces are of what's going to trip you up, of what's hard for you, mm-hmm. and where you might find yourself getting overly invested because of your own personal experiences. Mm. And so I think that is a very difficult thing to figure out, but the faster you can start to wrap your mind around how much of this is me, how much of this is me trying to be my own savior and remembering things from my own past or from my own experiences that I'm maybe projecting onto this situation or taking more personally than I would otherwise because of my own lived experience. And so that, I think, is a skill that the faster you can master as a young teacher, the easier it's going to be to help the students in front of you and know this is something I need to report, this is something I need to act on, or this is something that I just personally have a judgment or a feeling about because of my own lived experiences.
Ooh, that is a hot take. Wow. Gina and I we're doing that eye-popping thing over here. We're like, okay. Because, there was a little judgment in there. I'll admit it. Mm-hmm. I was judging that boy's parents.
And also out of love, right? Like you are just saying, I'm worried about this student because I care about them. And what does this mean?
Right.
I also hear curiosity from mm-hmm. you in that situation of just what else is going on here? What else could I infer based on this information? And those are good skills that teachers have too. You sometimes don't get a lot of clues about the fact that someone is in need of help, and you have to be able to react to those. So I don't mean judgment in a bad way. You do need to make judgments about things as an educator and say, this might be a sign of something else and we need to look further into it. Yeah. But sometimes it is just a judgment that is purely that, and you have to be able to acknowledge that too.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't say anything to the boy or anyone else. I just mm-hmm. noticed it and was curious about it. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Hair brushing is another thing. I remember one teacher saying that there was another little girl who came and her hair was never brushed. And I was like, please, as a parent, please do not judge me if my kid goes to school without her hairbrush.
Sure.
Because hair brushing is a whole thing that, on any given morning can be really tough. Okay, so let's set the whole idea behind of judgment, because there's a couple things that I want to dive into a little bit. One is this idea of what you're bringing from your own life. That's huge. And the other is this beautiful little nugget, which I always forget, and you always bring it up again and again, which is this is a skill that a new teacher needs to work on mastering, like classroom management. This is a skill. You can learn it. you can get really good at it. I love that. That's so empowering, Gina. If you're running next door to your teacher mentor and saying, I don't know what to do about this. Mm-hmm. And your teacher's like, well, this is a skill and here's how you learn how to navigate it. Boom. You feel empowered.
Absolutely. Because I think we're talking about mindsets as well. Like you can work at what your mindset is. You can have reminders. You can have a person who reminds you that there are choices in how you're going to view something. There's choices in having this mindset or that mindset. I think also what you bring to the classroom, it makes me think about how I grew up in this very idyllic situation, you know, a rural farm, just a lovely family. I had a great childhood. And then I came to a large public school and I saw that people do life in a lot of different ways. Yeah. Families look a lot of different ways. And my way, my vision, what I saw isn't the way. It was just a way. And so that's what I brought with me.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We return now to our Teacher Talk segment, the conversation, and the companion blog post. It's all part of Gina Benz's Dear New Teacher series. Jackie, if you come from a background where there was a little trauma in your education, maybe you were a struggling student, or you had really hard stuff at home, and you find yourself being sparked or triggered or extra emotional about things that you see in these children's lives, where do you begin doing your own work? Where does your work begin and your work as a teacher? Like, you know what I'm asking here.
I do know what you're asking. First, I encourage all folks in the categories that you're talking about, right? Well, honestly, all walks of life make great teachers because all walks of life go to school. That's I try to communicate this in a lot of different ways, but I think that the school system is so much more robust when students have role models who look like them, who have shared experiences like them, because they can say, oh, here's an adult who's fully functioning and helpful and kind and grew up like me, and here they are being okay, and that's going to be the case for me too. I just think that's such a powerful thing to do. And then that person, whomever you are out in the world who's thinking about being an educator, you got to the point that you're at. So you know what your coping skills were to be able to get there. You know who you needed to lean on. You know what strategies worked best for you. And that's you being able to own those skills that you've cultivated and then share them with the youth of America is incredibly powerful. So I hesitate to be too prescriptive to say, like, definitely do therapy or do a walk every day or do, you know, X, Y, or Z, because I think that a lot of those things are so personalized. What I would say is do the work, whatever it is that works for you. If you need to exercise in the morning, if you are a meditator, if you are someone who goes to talk therapy, whatever it is that works, double down on it because you are going to need it during your time of teaching, especially early on. You just need the supports in place. I think that's been my number one advice as I've been teaching this school year, is to just start building those skills now of your support and self-care, because you will rely on it so much while you're teaching. And then that's also, I think, what we can show young people is this is how you take care of yourself as an adult. I'm doing these things right now. I need to do it. You will need to do them too. I'm modeling this behavior for you.
Yeah. And you didn't get here with no skills.
Right.
Did you hear what she said there, Gina?
I sure
like you, you're already in the classroom. You've already gotten your degree. You've already gone through the work that it takes to get there. You didn't do that by not having any personal skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You already have.
It's hard to remember when there's a whole bunch of kids looking at you and you don't know what to do, right?
And to some extent, you've already managed, here's our word again, some emotional regulation.
Yeah.
Right? Words, not word, huh? In Teacher Pathway, my students who are, it's like that base level education course, we do a lot of work nowadays with, how are you going to emotionally regulate? How are you going to take care of yourself? How are you going to be able to be your best so that you can be the best teacher possible for those kids? And it's so important on the front end, as Jackie was saying. I'm going to put it out there. It's important all throughout the career. I'm thinking about the idea of burnout.
Sure.
And if we can take care of ourselves, find our boundaries, be the best we can be, that will prevent burnout and help so we don't have a teacher shortage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We should do another conversation about if you're feeling burned out, how can you reset without quitting and walking away for a year?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like if you don't want to walk away, but yet you really are burned out, what are, if you don't have a sabbatical or you can't make it to summer, what are some of those tips? Have you ever read that book, Burnout?
No.
I have not.
I'm going to send you a link because I really was feeling, during the pandemic in journalism, was really feeling burned out and I didn't want to leave my job. So I read that book and listened to these two women's podcasts and took some very specific action that helped me recover from that without having to step away for an extended period of time.
I love that.
Because most people can't afford to step away,
yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, for an extended period of time, or you just don't want to because you do like your job.
Yeah.
You just want to like it more. You know, maybe you're not liking it in that moment.
Well, and I think this goes with the theme again of this episode of the blog post, that once you're, when you're trying to do it all and be the savior of everything.
Yes. Let's
go back to that. You are going to burn out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being the savior of everything and all things, you are going to burn out. That is a prescription for burning out. Tell me a little bit. We've talked before, Gina, about, you know, you have an administrator, you have, you know, a partner, you have a trusted mentor at work, you have coaches, counselors, mental health providers. A lot of people listening who are in education maybe don't have that in their school district, but there might be some resources for kids with mental health issues. Talk about using some of those resources to alleviate the idea that you, as the teacher, have to do all of it.
Yeah, it's a tremendous privilege, but also, I hate to use the word burden, but there's a responsibility, we'll say that. That comes with being, especially an English teacher, where kids write things, and they write a lot. And thankfully, in a lot of subjects, students are writing more and more, and so this is extending to all subject areas.
Yeah.
But with that, there are times students just need to get something out. They just need to tell something. And as a teacher, we need to recognize that we're not going to save them from this. We are going to be we're the open door, and then we're going to show them down the right hallways, give them the support, the resources they need. And I am very quick to reach out to counselors or admin, whatever the support is in the building, so that my students have all the resources they need. And it's not all on me. It can't be all on me.
Yeah. Sometimes you walk someone to the next place and then you
sit
with them, show them your support, and then you walk away.
Actually, that's one of my most common things. I say, the student tells me what's going on. I ask a few questions. And then I say, you know what? I think a counselor will have some really good insights for you and be a great listener for you because they're trained to do this.
Yeah.
Walk with me. Let's go. And we go in, and we make an appointment with the counselor, or they sit and wait for a counselor, and I can often sit with them. Even if I have a class, usually somebody else can go sit with my class for just a little bit.
Oh, I love that.
It was my favorite part of being a librarian, among many other things. And honestly, this is something I did this year before the school year started, was gather up all the resources and put them at my disposal. So that way when someone said, this is the problem I'm having, I was helping by saying, here's the resource that's available to you.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
I loved doing that as a librarian. I would be like, well, I know where the tax preparation help is, you know, and I could say that happened actually at the library. A fair amount was people needed help with their taxes, and I am never pretending to be an accountant, but I would know where the resources existed. And so a big chunk of my syllabi this year is just resources that the University of South Dakota provides, and we talked through all of them as one of my opening things. And then that was actually, I've been doing that a lot this year in my class. I do something, and then because I'm working with future educators, I say, here's the reason I did what I just did.
Yeah.
Why would it be important for you to go through all the resources that your school offers when you're a teacher one day? And so we had this conversation about how important it is for students to know all the resources and how you might not know what resources they do need because you're just meeting them. And so it's good for everyone to just be aware of what's out there and what's available.
Hot tip, the librarian is one of your resources if you have a school librarian.
Absolutely. Yes. They do know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or your public librarian might have gathered all the resources together at the beginning of every school year. Ask them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Use your resources. You can't save other people, but you can work at saving yourself. Or you can find the people and the resources who can help you. I'm trying to find the right words here, but who can help you do what you can to save yourself.
Yeah. Sometimes self-reliance and resilience means reaching out and finding. Now, look, that is an act of independence, is to reach out and find the people who can help you.
Yeah, that's an act of saving yourself, finding the help.
Oh, I just feel every time you come in, I just feel like the weight is off my shoulders. Let's close with this idea of, you know, from time to time, the stories will upset you, but there are also seeds that are blossoming that maybe you'll never know, but sometimes they come back and they teach down the hallway from you.
Yes, a student might have a tremendous need. There might be tremendous struggle. And it starts with dependence. They're going to depend on the teacher for some help and some guidance. But the teacher's job is to move them toward independence. And I think with that mindset, we can all be happier at our jobs and avoid that burnout.
I love that. Jackie, any final thoughts that you want to add?
Yeah, I love this seed metaphor. Gina wrote about it in the blog as well as just now. And I think a lot like actual gardening, you don't always get to determine what, in fact, you never get to determine what blooms, how it blooms, how long it blooms. But that doesn't mean you stop planting seeds. And I think that is the beauty of being an educator, is you are there planting seeds, tending the growing garden of these young students' minds, and you don't get to be attached to the results. However it works out is how it works out. But it's really a beautiful role to have, to be there while they're learning and growing and becoming who they're going to be in the world.
Teacher Talk is also a podcast. You can find it on your preferred podcast platform. And you can find all the companion blogs, including links to research, on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. On tomorrow's In the Moment, absentee voting begins this week. We'll provide a little more clarity on initiated Measure 28. That's a ballot question that would prohibit taxes on items sold for human consumption in South Dakota. Well, what exactly does that mean? Human consumption, that's important. We're going to unpack and explain it. We'll talk with Rick Weiland, Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken, and Dakota political junkie Jonathan Ellis. Thursday, September 9th, join me for a live broadcast featuring children's authors from the South Dakota Festival of Books. We have got Olympic champion Billy Mills, S.D. Nelson, Donna Janelle Bowman, and Tracy Hoff. They're all going to be in the Sioux Falls studios with me. The event is free. It is open to the public. That's you. You're the public. It's open to you. Doors open at 11:30 at our studios at the corner of 4th and Phillips in downtown Sioux Falls. And if you can't join us live on Thursday, listen in at noon and 7 p.m. Central. Also, you can come make public radio with me at the South Dakota Festival of Books on Friday and Saturday, September 20 through the 21st in Brookings. We will see you there. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.